welcome in to the inaugural edition of the Rockies Insider on Blake Street Banter, the road to Blake Street with my new co-host, Noah Spyrek. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, I'm so happy. I'm so excited for this. This means baseball is here. Does it get any better than that?
It does. Yeah. No, like, and good baseball people, you're right. It doesn't get any better than this. So I'm glad to be doing a show with you every single week. It's going to be wonderful. It'll be even better when we're together at Coors Field in the summer. We'll see if we can do some post-game shows from Coors Field. We'll have to work out the logistics. But nevertheless, two guys who know the Rockies rather well and are learning even more about them each and every day, doing a show together. I mean, as far as I know, nobody else is doing that.
You're right. They got to call us the Bronx Bombers, the way that we're going to be snaking around Coors Field getting everything this summer. I'm excited.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And I'm glad to be doing this pod with you.
I'm glad that we're bringing you on the Rockies Insider, Blake Street, the crossover. I'm just so excited.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. And we had the first full team workout today down at Scottsdale at Salt River Fields. And so the vibes are starting to get heated up.
Yeah, and you were there, so I'm mad jealous because I'm walking around campus in 5-degree weather and you're out there in Arizona worried about managing sunburn. How was the first day with boots on the ground there?
I was wearing sneakers, not boots, but I wanted to be wearing sandals, though, because it was very hot. What's going on, Grant? Thanks for jumping in. Brian, already in the chat on YouTube. Appreciate you guys big time. It was great. You just have to make sure you remember to bring your hat with you so that you can block the sun out, because that sun is strong. The temperatures are pretty darn perfect. So I'm not going to complain about maybe getting a little bit of a sunburn, because it feels like it's in the single digits all around the country at this point, from Colorado to Wyoming and Indiana. It's very cold. And so, you know, 45 degrees when you wake up, a little chill in the air is a good thing. It's a baseball chill, right? It's the chill you would almost feel on opening day. And then once the sun comes out by 9:10, the guys are out there stretching, doing their thing, taking live batting practice, seeing some of the best young pitchers with some of the more veteran bats, and then still some young hitters as well. It's definitely prospect on prospect here down in Scottsdale. So the first day of camp was really good. And the vibes were definitely up. Everyone was really glad to be back and somewhat in-game action.
I saw your tweet this morning live from Arizona, and the birds chirping. That was just glorious. And I walk outside, I'm just met with a freezing wind blowing in my face. I think all the content that I saw throughout the day was super interesting. Obviously, you were there. Chris Bryant got hit with a pitch. What's up with that? Already getting too close to call for KB, I'm sure.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that one, so I didn't see that. And while the innocent, we should make it be clear, it's actually three Scotts and a Dale. If you're going to get a reference right, make sure you know it's three Scotts and one Dale. Having a good time down in Scottsdale with Sabrina Carpenter down here. Having a blast. Yeah, he got hit on one of those. Every time I film video, nothing usually happens most of the time. Like, think about a game. If you were to like film a player's at bat, chances are not something interesting is going to happen. And even if a guy does get hit by a pitch, you're like, well, it's in game action. That's fine. It's a real game. It counts. But for it to be on the backfield and just be live BP teammate on teammate like that is all the more worse. But the guy's got to make sure that they're throwing in strikes, filling up the strike zone so that they're not injuring teammates. It looks more like a glancing blow to Bryant there on like the left elbow or lower tricep area. So he should be good. As far as injuries go, I think that one was the only one. That's somewhat of an anomaly. Usually you don't see, you know, things like that going down. But hey, look, it's baseball, so it's going to happen.
Absolutely. And shoot, I was just about to ask what Christian just commented down in our chat. I saw that we got Germán Márquez going out there and touching 98, which, gosh, it feels like it's been way too long since we've seen him crank it up to that level. What did you see out of him? And this morning during media availability, what did Bud Black talk about just as we get to ramp things up here in spring training?
Yeah, well, each day when we talk with Buddy, the topics will vary based on whatever that, you know, the reporters that are there are working on. And so usually we each have two or three different things, and then we'll kind of hammer that out as much as possible, piggyback. And so the topics of conversation didn't have anything to do with Germán Márquez today, but it was just great seeing him out there doing his thing. I don't think I mentioned it on the Rockies Insider podcast, but I was there for one of the panels at Rockies Fest, and it was a starting pitchers panel, and Márquez was the first one for Jerry Schemmel to announce. And every time he took the mic, Rockies fans like were cheering for him. Like, it was this reminder too, that I'm sure, you know, he has forgotten or missed, at least to a degree, certainly not forgotten, of how great this guy was as the last starting pitcher to be an all-star for the Rockies, a somewhat homegrown guy who, you know, did come up from the minor leagues. Sure, he was traded only a few months prior in 2016, but nevertheless, this was a young guy that came up, now has the all-time strikeout record, which, remember, he did in his one and only start in 2024 at Citi Field, not at Coors. So he, in a similar way to Antonio Senzatella, is going to have to wait 2 years before getting on the mound in Denver. So that reception from fans was wonderful to see, and wonderful for Herman to get back out there and do his thing and kind of remind you that, hey, wait a minute, there was an ace of the staff that, sure, if you were drawing up the best 30 starting pitchers in the game, there isn't necessarily one on every single team. But when healthy, Germán Márquez is certainly in that conversation. So as soon as you inject a guy like that to the top of your rotation and remove depth pieces, which the Rockies haven't really had the last couple of years, that is going to make your starting squad, you know, that much better. So it's wonderful to see him out there doing his thing. And Antonio Senzatella looking a little trimmer too, and ready to have a full campaign.
I'm so excited for our rotation. And shoot, talking about the love for Germán, I got my 48 jersey in my closet over there. Always been a big marquee guy. I think we finally are going to see Senzatella and Germán back and healthy for opening day, which is exciting in itself. And you think about the last time this franchise went to the postseason, 2018, the only three active players that were on that roster are Kyle Freeland, Germán Márquez, and Antonio Senzatella. And so they, you figure, have to be the trio leading the way this season, setting the tone going into next year, where we really hope to start competing to make the postseason. Do we think that heading into 2025, what are we expecting from Kyle Freeland? Because last year was a bit of a mixed bag at times.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I actually just had an article come out on justbaseball.com about Kyle Freeland's 2024. You know, I only had those four starts on opening day. I mean, he's not able to get out of the third inning. He's charged with 10 runs. Seems like things couldn't possibly get worse from there. You know, he has the weird injury after pinch running and sliding into home plate. And that ultimately wasn't even the injury that was his setback. And then going not just on the IL, but on the 60-day IL for the first time in his career. And so all of that time allowed him to think about what his next steps were, think about what, you know, changes he needs to make, and consult with teammates and coaches, which, if you remember, in 2019, he didn't really do. You know, had that fourth place finish in the Cy Young Award voting, and then the next year, immediately in the first 2 months, really just didn't have anything after that first start he made that year. And then he gets sent down to the minors and didn't really make the changes he needed to as a young player. He really wasn't ready to do that. As Bud Black said during our media scrum this morning, is that a lot of young guys, and rightfully so, they make it to the majors on their own skills. And they say, hey, I'm confident, right? It's not necessarily stubbornness as it is a confidence. Like, no, what I did to get here worked. Why would I change that? And so sometimes, you know, you have to fall down and have that bit of failure. So for Freeland to then come back and over his next 17 starts after being on the IL, I think it was June 23rd was when he came back and had a sub 4 ERA. You throw out that last start against the Cardinals and he actually had a 3.57 ERA in 16 starts. So one of the best stretches of his career. And so that was one of the questions I asked Freeland, is with these young guys on the roster, can you somehow impart that wisdom to those young players so that they don't have to go through those same general growing pains? And so that maybe, as you pointed out, maybe these young starters in the AAA rotation, AA rotation, or maybe in the case of Chase Dolander, in the actual Rockies rotation that maybe some of these young guys can be a lot like Marquez, Senzatella, Freeland, and be the start of something new, a new window of contention, much like those three guys were when they went to the postseason in 2017 and 2018, largely as rookies or, you know, early service time players. That potential is there for the Rockies right now. I don't know if we'll see all of those guys come together in 2025. It may have to wait until 2026, but we are certainly on the precipice of history repeating itself in that positive way.
It really does feel like it's been a long time where going into a season, I feel this excited about a rotation, and obviously health has a lot to do with that. But I think also, like, this is a fresh wave of arms that are ready. I mean, you think about Carson Palmquist, obviously Chase Dolander, the magician Sean Sullivan, excuse me, a little mouthful there. Do you think that with all of these guys right on the cusp of bursting onto the major league scene, how do you think that we can imagine a world where all of them are able to debut in this upcoming year? And shoot, could that come through something like a six-man rotation? I just want to see these guys play.
Well, I'll give you credit. Got to give credit where credit is due. You had an article over on BlakeStreetBanner.com about how strong the Rockies rotation is for many of those reasons, with all of those young guys to call upon, not just bodies in AAA, but guys that have upside that could very well be a part of the team's future. So it's not just a spot start. It's like, hey, this guy could take the reins and maybe you don't send him back down because he is that good. So I think there is a chance that, you know, you do see some of those guys in 2025, and whether or not they all arrive this year or not, I don't think as important as it is that they are given that opportunity and that transition does happen to 2026. What that looks like this year, you know, I'm not exactly sure. It's hard to keep an entire rotation healthy, you know, with Marquez and Senzatella coming back. You know, they might be on somewhat of an innings limit. So, you know, they could start the season healthy, and then, you know, they might, you know, their body might not necessarily betray them, but they could be going through it just a little bit. And then you could see a 15-day IL stint, you know, and they miss, you know, three or four starts. And then that opens the door for somebody like a Sean Sullivan or Chase Dolander, if he doesn't make the team out of spring training, and gets those reps. Carson Palmquist, maybe you keep him around as a long reliever and he's making a couple spot starts in a similar fashion to an Anthony Molina, who's also a depth piece, which you touched on in that article. So, you know, the Rockies do need to make that transition here relatively quickly, because Marquez is a free agent and so is Austin Gomber at the end of this year. And then, you know, beyond that, you do have Freeland and Senzatella free agency looming, and it's really only Ryan Feltner at that point. So at some point you do need to get these young guys ready and turn the keys over to them.
Yeah. It sneaks up fast, because I remember buying that Germán Marquez jersey 3 or so years ago and thinking, strategically looking at who's under contract for the longest, and all of a sudden it's 2025. And as you said, it's a contract year for Germán. Obviously the club, the organization really has dealt with so many pitching injuries recently. As they start spring training, is there any, did Buddy or anyone get a chance to talk about the plan for ramping up the pitchers, a load management, just to try to have all hands on deck heading into the season?
Well, nothing exactly like that, but you do have to be cautious with guys because it is such a long season. I mean, here we are in the middle of February, and even if the Rockies aren't going to the postseason, which I think is a safe assumption in many ways, that's still 7 months that these guys are going to be throwing pitches. And if you know anything about the human body, it is not natural to be throwing a baseball overhand in any way. So injuries do happen. So, you know, these guys might need to have, you know, various setbacks. We know that Sean Sullivan with his hip surgery during the offseason, he is slightly behind schedule a little bit. Now, they're not counting on him in the majors just yet, but that could be, you know, a story for this season to keep an eye on, and maybe somebody passes him up somewhere as a depth piece. He's not even on the 40-man roster. So obviously you would like the odds of someone like a Tanner Gordon or Bradley Blaylock, who are on the 40-man roster, to get opportunities before someone like a Sean Sullivan. So, you know, they'll just watch those guys, make sure that they go along slowly. You know, I don't know if the plan could even possibly be that one of Marquez or Senzatella does start the year on the IL in order to manage those innings, or almost keep them on opposite clocks. You know, if you were to say, you typically think now you get 30 starts from a starter, right? If a guy's healthy, he's going to go out there and post every 5.5 days, basically, for 30 starts. Well, if you got 30 starts out of Marquez and Senzatella combined, right there, you'd be pretty happy, all things considered. As long as it's a healthy 30 starts, you would kind of take that. So that means when one guy is active, the other guy might be on the IL, kind of resting, recovering, doing that. So they'll have to monitor that. The only other player that it's, you know, worth noting the health of is Lucas Gilbreth. We haven't heard that he's exactly behind schedule, but you know, the surgery that he did have on his shoulder. Anytime you've got any kind of thoracic outlet syndrome issue and blood clotting in, you know, at altitude in Denver, we saw what that did to Scott Oberg's career. That's certainly nothing, you know, that you want to mess with. So, you know, you have to err on the side of caution more than anything. So if anybody complains about anything, or, you know, they're not going to complain, but if you notice the wincing, and if they're being honest with themselves, you know, because it is a marathon, you really have to, you know, take it slow just a little bit.
Yeah, not worth pushing it anywhere close to the boundary. I mean, early in the year, let alone in spring training. I think shifting gears a little bit here, obviously this is the first spring training without Charlie Blackmon as a player in a long, long time for the Colorado Rockies. And entering a year with, you know, some experience on the pitching side of things and also a lot of youth across the rest of the roster, who do you see being a candidate to step up and kind of take on more of a leadership role in 2025?
That's probably one of the biggest questions I have, you know, besides just in general, hey, the young guys, who's going to step up, who's going to get, you know, the first opportunities. That's very obvious. But then the next question really becomes, who is going to be a leader for this team, as you said, with Charlie's retirement? And so, okay, Ryan McMahon, you know, basically has the next most amount of service time on this roster as really the last position player. We talked about the pitchers from 2018 still being around. He would be the last position player, you know, still just a rookie at that point. But it's him, and then you've got the two guys who really emerged last year as those cornerstone pieces in Ezekiel Tovar and Brenton Doyle. They've been the topic of conversation as those kind of leaders. I think maybe Michael Tolia could fit in with that group. Obviously, with the 21 home runs he hit last year, you go, you know, the last, you know, since the pandemic and since the trade of Nolan Arenado, you're hitting 20 home runs. That's pretty noticeable on this team. So I could see him emerging, but Brenton Doyle in some of the conversations he's had, and I think Patrick Saunders even wrote about this for the Denver Post, you know, he really wants to take up that mantle and really not just be a leader by example, but try and be a little bit more vocal. It's not necessarily his game, but I think he sees that, you know, opportunity very much in a positive way to say, hey, our clubhouse needs something. And although that might be the number one skill set that I have in abundance, I'm going to try to build that. I'm going to try to develop that because I do plan on being here for a while. And I do want this team to get back to the postseason for the first time since 2018. And you know what? I think I might be the best candidate to step up and become a leader. And it's kind of fitting that he's going to be batting leadoff and playing center field with a skill set very similar to that of Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah, oh, a whole bunch of parallels there. Really cool to think about. And obviously Doyle is about to blossom into a five-tool player and improve the contact a little bit. He's got all the speed in the world. And of course, we know his fielding and rocket arm that he contains out there. You mentioned Michael Tolia, and I think real quick, we don't want to take for granted how nice it is to enter a campaign with an answer at first base. It feels like the Rockies have gone so long without entering a year, just knowing who's going to be out there 120, 130 plus times per year. And Tolia today, with I saw a clip talking about how he feels availability is maybe the best ability you can have. And I think having him lock down first base and hopefully take some strides from a season ago will lift this Rockies team to a much better position. But without that competition at first base. Where else could there be some interesting competitions this spring?
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of really, really interesting spots for those kind of battles. And like you said, there's not even any kind of competition for, like, who's going to back up Michael Toley when he has a day off. Because, A, he might not have a day off. He might just go 162. But as you said, you know, that load management is an important piece. And that's been another one of those topic of conversations. It's actually come up a couple times with Bud Black about keeping guys healthy. And, you know, it would be nice to play close to 160, you know, certainly 150. But you want to be available. You'd rather a healthy, say, 142 games than, you know, 150 and then really just being beaten down in the second half, like we saw out of Ryan McMahon, who went out and he played every single day despite, you know, his body kind of betraying him and him going through some lower half, you know, injury issues that he played through. And by managing that load, by taking those off days, even if Tovar doesn't want it, I think that's going to make, you know, everybody better. So, you know, maybe they'll have to have a little workaround for Tolia's Cal Ripken like streak. And it might have to be the DH if, you know, someone like Chris Bryant or Kyle Farmer is over at first base. But you mentioned the camp battles that are going on. You know, there's four that come to mind for me. And I'm not really sure what is the most interesting. I think maybe the most interesting because it is more finite than any of the other ones, because I think you can change at a moment's notice. But the backup catcher spot, or at least a spot in support of Jacob Stallings, to me, is the most interesting one, because you have three really good candidates, two really young candidates. If you talk about, you know, turning things over and letting the kids play, you would think it would have to be one of those two young players. But at the catcher spot, who's going to support Jacob Stallings? Is it going to be Drew Goodman? No. Is it going to be Drew Romo, Hunter Goodman, or Austin Nola, the veteran that was signed to a non-roster deal that he just didn't get a chance to play last year in the majors with Kansas City because Salvador Perez was there every day. And so is Freddie Fermin, who was a Gold Glove finalist at catcher for the American League. So they had an incredible catching tandem. And, you know, you are going to get, with one of those guys going back to AAA, more playing time, getting more at-bats. So there's that. But if you send both Romo and Goodman down to AAA, I don't know how they're both able to not just get the at-bats, but get the reps behind the plate, because that was one of the other larger takeaways from today's morning media scrum, is that despite the fact that the Rockies could potentially carry three catchers, and you would think, okay, Goodman becomes that backup for Tolia if Tolia needs a day. He can maybe even play a little bit of right field, which we'll get to that position in just a moment. But if he's doing that, when is he actually catching? And so, you know, on one hand, I could see how some people would be disappointed that, you know, they might not get creative in a sense to carry those three. But on the other, you know, they are committed to Goodman and, of course, Romo as full-time catchers. So they want to really make sure that they're true to both those guys.
Yeah, I thought the Nola acquisition this offseason was an interesting one, because it did feel like it almost created a logjam out of one that you didn't have before. But when you consider that Nola and Stallings will be able to mentor these two young catchers during the spring, I can see where they were thinking. I think it's interesting in terms of comparing Goodman and Romo, because they both kind of had separate paths in September last season. Hunter Goodman really kind of figured it out as the season went along. Of course, he had some peaks and valleys, as any young player does. But Drew Romo got called up and never really got his feet set in the ground. He struggled, and then all of a sudden he went like 20 days without playing, and gosh, that's not great for a young player's confidence. I just trying to imagine, as we saw in the Rockies Insider today, there's not going to be three catchers on this roster. So we know Bud Black loves his veteran catchers. Jacob Stallings will lead the way. Will Buddy really keep Nola around as another veteran behind Stallings? I have a hard time believing so, Maybe Nola proves in this spring, you know, he plays really well, earns that spot. Credit to him. I think when you try to pick between Romo and Goodman, at this point in his career, can we even classify Goodman as a catcher? I know you just touched on it, because it really feels like, you know, he says that for whatever reason, whenever he's behind the plate, he ends up hitting the ball better that day as well. And that's kind of just an interesting plus of seeing more pitches. But for Drew Romo, for an organization that once was so high on him, and really not that long ago, I want there to be some sort of plan, understanding that he'll struggle, for him to break through in 2025.
I think, you know, 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago at the beginning of the season, a signing like Austin Nola would have signaled like, oh, well, we know where this is headed. Like 100% we know. And I think a lot of fans who, you know, pay close enough attention to this team still, you know, still have that, has that muscle firing of like, okay, I know what this looks like. But this will be a really strong indicator as to the commitment level of the front office to these young players. And, you know, you look at the roster, the 40-man roster, or even the projected 26-man roster, there's only so many veteran players that they can have. So, you know, in a way, they can only get in their way so much. But you can get creative if you wanted to. If you needed a scenario in which you wanted a veteran like a Nick Martini on the roster, you could, or Nola, as we were talking about, or maybe Keston Hera, because, you know, he was able to hit 20 home runs, you know, for the Milwaukee Brewers a few years ago and was a high first round pick. And so you look and say, well, this is a veteran guy that the prospects and young players that we do keep around on the roster, they will benefit from. And then the guys that are down in AAA, well, they're going to benefit from playing time. So in theory, you can convince yourself that what you're doing is right, when the reality is, you know, I've said it before, it would almost be better to lose 110 with all of your young players than it would be, you know, to win 71 games and have a 10 win improvement with a lot of those veteran players, because they're not going to be around in a year or two from now, but those young guys are. And if they look back on 2025 and they didn't get that playing time, you know, were they actually able to flourish? Were they able to make those growths and make those strides through the pain, like a Michael Tolia? It took as long as it did. You know, would it have happened sooner? Maybe, maybe not. You know, should he have gotten an opportunity sooner? You certainly can make that argument. But it does seem like that situation at least worked itself out. We'll have to wait and see what happens with Austin Nola and with one of the young catchers making the opening day roster as Buddy's backup.
That's a great comparison, bringing in Tolia to the mix, because, gosh, that was a former first-round pick out of UCLA. And the fact that it took so long to work the Rockies way maybe wasn't a good thing, because you kind of learn – you correct through trial and error sometimes. That's kind of off the vein. I think another position battle that I've kind of seen – considered on social media, and I don't know if it's as big of a battle as people think, and I see Sean in the chat, Estrada versus Amador for second base. I think Tyro Estrada is your opening day starter at second base, and Amador is more in a competition with the veteran Keston Hira than he is with Estrada. And so what do you kind of think the timetable or plan is for Adeel Amador this year? Because last year, man, he came up, it was kind of a surprise in St. Louis, making his debut that early. What's in store for him in 2025, do you think?
Yeah, as you said, I think he might have been the first player, certainly under Bill Schmidt, but the last I can remember that was a position player that jumped from AA to the majors. We've seen the Rockies do it with pitchers before. We've seen other teams do that as well, but to not get an opportunity to pitch against veteran AAA pitchers, which is also comprised of quadruple A pitchers as well. So you need to take that step and to check off that box before you get to the major. So for a position player to do that, he was just unfortunately overmatched because of that. So I think he needs to get, you know, his legs he needs to get his legs underneath him, really build some momentum. You know, the Rockies did commit a big deal to Tyro Estrada, mutual option for next year. So there really isn't, you know, much of a battle. I think perhaps a better question, but really getting to, you know, what you had asked, Sean, is, you know, could there be a point in the year in which Estrada, let's say, is doing fine, but maybe, you know, not, you know, tearing the cover off the ball or whatever, and Amador is ready to go down in AAA, would you make a switch despite the fact that maybe Estrada is getting the job done? So the second base position battle, it's not really going on during spring training, but it very much could be won once we get into the season and Amador makes a little bit of noise in the Pacific Coast League.
Yeah, and shoot, we all hope that he takes that next step. Kind of a dip in 2024, and shoot, he had the injury, so that always kind of derails things. One of the more prominent battles I think that people are curious about is happening in right field. Jordan Beck, MLB has Chris Bryant as the opening day starter in right field. That was interesting to me. And then the next wave, Zach Veen and Yankiel Fernandez. Eventually, they're going to debut, and you have to imagine that it's going to be this year. So how do you see the balance there working out? Because it feels like this is a pretty pivotal year for Jordan Beck, who has kind of followed along the mold, the plan that you thought he'd take to in the timeline that the Rockies hoped he would take to get to the big leagues. Broke his hand last year, actually my first game at Coors Field. That was unfortunate. But what do you think in 2025, how does this balance and mix work out?
Yeah, that will be interesting to see, because if you do have, let's say, one of the corner outfielders, or even throw Doyle into that mix, if someone gets hurt, that really, I think, changes the mathematics a lot, because Sam Hilliard is he's not even just penciled in as the fourth outfielder. Use pen. You can use ink. He is guaranteed a spot. And so even if somebody outplays him, he is the veteran fourth outfielder that can play all three positions, and that will allow Doyle to have days off and allow him to be even more able and available, right, on a day-to-day basis. So he can be the DH. Hilliard's out in center field. That's a win-win. But what happens if somebody does go down? Because you could, in theory, just play Sam Hilliard more. But then now who becomes your fourth outfielder, right? Does that become someone like a Sean Bouchard, who's still on the 40-man roster? Or do you actually have to turn the keys over to, like you said, one of those young guys like a Zach Veen or Yankiel Fernandez? Speaking with someone today, I thought the organization had Veen ahead of Yankiel Fernandez. But someone I spoke with today said, I think Yankiel Fernandez maybe has an edge over Zach Veen. So that in and of itself becomes a battle. Like who is the top AAA outfielder? Is, you know, it's almost a luxury to have a battle like that, but that is a sign of what's to come. So those two guys, while they might be on the outside looking in terms of the opening day roster for Tampa on March 28th, who is in line to be the first one to get called up if someone goes down, or if Nolan Jones, or Jordan Beck ends up struggling? As far as the dynamics in right field, as you touched on, Jordan Beck really is that guy. Though, you know, on MLB.com, it also suggests that Chris Bryant is going to be in right field. Now, there's been some speculation that perhaps the Rockies would use Chris Bryant in right field on the road versus at altitude. And I think you understand the logic of, again, of what playing at altitude can do to the body. But the devil's advocate to that would be, instead of him playing at altitude, which we know is rough, in a ballpark that he's familiar with, instead he would be playing on the road in ballparks he's not familiar with. I mean, look at Aaron Judge. He played center field all of last year. He's not a center fielder, but he made it out healthy. What happened in 2023 when he went to Dodger Stadium and he was not familiar with that ballpark? He got hurt very badly. So, you know, in theory, protecting a guy from altitude really puts him in harm's way in a different type of way by doing it in ballparks that he's not as familiar with. So whether, you know, Chris Bryant being penciled in as the right fielder is a communication of their intention, or maybe it's a communication of what they want Chris Bryant to hear so that he can get himself ready for it, I'll let you decide. But my money would be on Jordan Beck to be in right field on opening day.
I'm with you. And that I had not even thought about. You know, you protect a player one way, it might end up hurting him another. That's super interesting. And you made the great connection to Aaron Judge. Just stuff you don't really think of. Regardless, right field will be an interesting one, a position to watch organizationally. I mean, Greg Jones got big league time last year, and what's in store for him this year? That's another one to keep an eye on. It feels like the Rockies have had an outfield logjam in the organization for several years in a row now, and it kind of got to be played out last year with the way Nolan Jones struggled, got hurt, Jordan Beck got hurt, and obviously Doyle coming up 2 years ago and then breaking onto the scene last year. That was fantastic for the Rockies. Now you see people on social media clamoring for an extension. Like, the Rockies need hits like that, and I believe Patrick Saunders wrote, and I read about it, that Jordan Beck needs to be the next one to take that leap. And that would be fantastic, of course. I just think it's going to be really interesting because it all does hinge on health. And shoot, if you're looking at longevity alone and games played, Chris Bryant, you have to protect him any way you can because you have not gotten the production or anything close to it that you expected when you inked him to that long-term deal. And so to me, an interesting question is what makes 2025 successful for KB? And I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I know the fans need something from KB this year.
I think that's a great question too, right? Like what would be a success? I started thinking before you asked that, like, you know, how can you get Chris Bryant momentum? And honestly, it's just keeping him on the field, right? You do still have three more years, you know, after this year coming up. So you're not even halfway through this contract. And sure, you know, there's been conversation of, well, if this happens, you know, will you just have to cut bait, you know, to free up a roster spot, which again, is something a team that's a lot closer to 500 would do versus one coming off of back-to-back 100 loss seasons and ultimately the worst 6-year stretch in franchise history. So I think you still can roster a guy like that. So first, just keeping him healthy and being on the field and allowing him perhaps to build some momentum in the clubhouse of like being a leader and showing guys the ropes, because you saw that a little bit in 2023 with Nolan Jones, because he kind of took Nojo under his wings, you know, just a little bit. Now, Brian didn't necessarily benefit from that on the field, but Nolan Jones did. And I don't really know that anybody benefited in that same way last year because of all of the IL stints again for KB. So I think just keeping him healthy is going to be, you know, beneficial for everybody. He's here, you know, to stay, at least in the present. So you might as well see if you can get as much out of him as possible. And by keeping him healthy, you're keeping him engaged. People are learning from that. You know, if there comes a scenario or situation where he needs to get benched, you know, it communicates to the young guys that, like, look, it doesn't matter how much you're getting paid, you have to produce or you have to do X, Y, and Z. And those are the expectations. So him being around, I think, can provide a lot of learning lessons in the worst case scenario. In the best case scenario, you have a guy that might still be able to hit 280 and maybe, you know, scratch close to 20 home runs, which, you know, feels like a stretch based on what we've seen so far. But if you're healthy and if he can play 130 games, now all of a sudden a 15 home run season and he finishes the year healthy has you feeling a little bit differently about 2026 and like, okay, actually, you know what, maybe, you know, KB could be a DH that does end up hitting 20 homers and maybe can, you know, hit 300 for the first time in a while. So he, like a lot of these young players in the franchise as a whole, needs to, I think, build momentum and really just staying on the field, and the Rockies doing their part to keep him on the field. Whether that is as a DH, which technically isn't the field, but you know what I'm saying. Keeping him in the lineup, I should say, is a major key to success for this year and going forward.
Kind of feels like the word for the year is health. Talked about finally the rotation is healthy. Chris Bryant is healthy right now. Got to keep it that way. So if you were to pin a word in the Rockies clubhouse for 2025, you know, maybe it's not setting a win total, just health. We all got to take steps forward, and you know, the players, consistent playing time is the ultimate medicine. You know, when you're struggling, pitchers talk about it all the time. They get blown up one start, they just want the next one to come instantly. And so I got to imagine when you go 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, you want to get back in that batter's box the next day. And so I think all we can ask for is health in 2025.
And I would add not even just physical health, but also mental health, because we know, you know, Nolan Jones has been really hard on himself. We know a lot of these young players, there are certain expectations on them. I think the expectations for a lot of these prospects is a lot different than, you know, what we saw in the 2010s when John Gray came up and was seen as this franchise savior. And while, you know, I think there might be those whispers about Chase Dolander, it's not the same way. It's not, it just doesn't seem to be the same situation. Despite the fact that the ceiling might be even higher for Dolander than John Gray, there just isn't that pressure being heaped upon him like it was for John Gray and then Trevor Story after that. So just a different dynamic. And, you know, that was something that Freeland mentioned that I wrote about in the Just Baseball article about, you know, trying to impart that wisdom of when he did get sent down to 2019, like failures are a part of the game. As the old, you know, saying goes in baseball, if you make an out 7 out of 10 times, you're going to the Hall of Fame. Like, that's crazy to think about, but that is baseball. And that's why we love the game.
Yeah. And shoot, I think sometimes playing with a chip on your shoulder or being freed from the pressure of the previous year can ignite a guy. I saw a clip today of Justin Lawrence, and shoot, the conversation about mental health reminded me of him, because last year felt like a year where it's like, all right, he's going to secure the closer role this year. That obviously didn't happen, and he ended up getting hurt, and he came back and he struggled, just, you know, kind of followed the same rocky road. I wonder that if this year, with him being freed from the pressure of the closer role, if we could expect a bounce back season for Justin Lawrence. And, you know, he doesn't have to worry about the closer role, but, you know, other people do. I will kind of pivot into the last position battle we have here. The closer spot's open for a couple of young guys. I think Victor Vodnik has a real good chance. Seth Halverson gave himself a fantastic chance last year. And then what kind of year are you going to get from Tyler Kinley? Because, man, before he hurt his elbow a couple seasons ago, he was pitching to, you know, half a run ERA. It was absolutely insane. He was going to be our all-star as a reliever. So what do you think evolves at the closer position for 2025?
Yeah, going back to the initial question about which of the position battles is most interesting, I thought about saying closer, but that is one in which can change, you know, almost overnight, maybe not literally, but that can change. And then you can earn that spot back, right? Because even once you lose that job as a closer, you don't get sent down to AAA. Now you're just maybe going to be working the seventh and eighth. You know, you build a little bit of that momentum back, right? So, but that is really fascinating to think that, you know, in a spot that's typically, almost always across the board, is a more veteran guy, for, you know, Buddy to possibly go with a rookie like Seth Halverson, who didn't even debut until September of last year. Or again, still a young service time guy like a Victor Vodnik, who has had that success. You know, either one of those guys definitely, you know, shows that there is somewhat of a change of how, you know, players are being evaluated by this roster. So they make an interesting group. And then, as you said, taking a little bit of weight off the shoulders of Justin Lawrence. I mean, he took a little bit of weight off of his shoulders too by cutting those locks, right? Like, yeah. You know, was he viewing himself, and rightfully so. You know, we talk about that strange balance that players have to have of confidence when they fail so much, and how easy it could be to get yourself into a mental rut, which we've seen Nolan Jones do. But, you know, Could you theorize that maybe Justin Lawrence saw himself as this next great reliever? We saw what the sweeper was doing. The pitching ninja was putting this guy on a pedestal, and he had the look, and he unfortunately just wasn't able to get it done. But he had the mindset that I can be dominant. And I think now that he's perhaps taken some of that pressure off of himself and maybe removed a bullseye, because when players do that, you know, guys on other teams are saying, oh, you think you're great? Watch me expose you for what you are. And for Justin Lawrence, who I think he only just is arbitration eligible this year. So sure, he's 30 years old, but he's still a young player developing himself. So now maybe in a seventh inning role where you're, as you said, is no longer the closer. He's no longer maybe trying to fit in the mold. He just wants to help out and give back. Maybe he is now able to take major steps forward. And whether or not you inject him back into a closer conversation is neither here nor there. But it gives you a veteran presence to go along with Tyler Kinley, as you said, was a guy who was really dominant and gives you that veteran presence. And Jimmy Hergett really would be the only other one. Yep. So very quickly, Justin Lawrence could make that impact for Buddy to say, you know what, some of these young guys can be a little bit volatile, but I feel comfortable turning, you know, the final nine outs over to any combination of a Lawrence, Hergett, Tyler Kinley, and then, you know, Vodnik, Halverson, whoever your closer is. And all of a sudden that's going to shorten up games, build momentum, and allow you to feel, you know, a lot better how the season's going.
It is so exciting to enter a campaign with this much potential in the bullpen from young guys. We saw flashes from everyone last year. We didn't even talk about Luis Peralta, who was maybe the most impressive from the left side.
Also, how about Jeff Criswell?
Yeah.
Hey, how about Jaden Hill?
Yeah.
Hey, how about Angel Chivigi? Like, there was a lot of guys, right?
Yeah, it's super encouraging. And also, it kind of feels like Charlie's still there. Did you see Kinley's beard? That thing's impressive.
Yeah, that was great. And if you go over on social media right now and you throw it a like, it'll get even bigger because the Rockies were having fun. Somebody actually did talk about that today at an event this evening about TK. And so national people are paying attention to Tyler Kinley now.
Heck yeah. I think someone's just got to carry the legacy of the beard. And shoot, if it's Kinley,
Jake Bird. I haven't seen any photos of Jake Bird yet, but he's got full shaved head. He's got a good thick head of hair, but shaved down, and he's got the big beard. I mean, I think Jake Bird has shown glimpses over the last 3 years. I mean, I can remember when he first came up and was put in some big spots in 2022, and I asked Bud, like, who was the last guy that he can remember pitching in big spots like that? Immediately coming up, and certainly, you know, the player he mentioned is in a different category than a Jake Bird, but it gives you an idea of who Jake Bird was able to rub up against a little bit as a rookie. And he said, well, the last guy that I can remember that made an impact and was put into big spots late in games would have been Francisco Rodriguez back in 2002 when Bud Black was the pitching coach for the Angels in a season in which they did win the World Series and beat Barry Bonds and the San Francisco Giants. So Jake Bird got the trust of his manager as quickly as K-Rod did of Mike Socia. So, you know, I think, you know, he's had a couple of hiccups, but he's also one of those guys where I think we could be sitting here doing, you know, Road to Blake Street in 2026. And we're saying, well, we know the eighth inning is locked down by Jake Bird. I really think we could live in a world where that does become a reality.
Shoot, we saw what he could do before he got hurt. I mean, Bud Black was throwing him out there two out of every three nights. He led Major League Baseball in innings and appearances and was super effective. He was Bryce Harper's biggest nightmare. He gave us one of the more exciting moments at Coors Field over the past couple seasons. So I love that call for Jake Bird.
Yeah, no, he's going to be one of those key players for the bullpen. Because the nice thing that the Rockies have right now with so many guys with options is an ability to ride a hot hand or an ability to easily refresh the bullpen instead of a guy goes to the IL and then they have to promote a veteran like a John Curtis. No knock on him, but you promote someone like him, add him to the 40-man roster, and now somebody else needs to come up. Well, now you got to designate him for assignment, and you might not be able to keep him in the organization. Now they'll be able to keep a lot of those young guys fresh to go back and forth between Albuquerque and Denver. And I think, you know, when you look at what Jeff Criswell was able to do last year, you have to remind yourself that it doesn't matter what Albuquerque said, because that is like playing on another planet, as we know. And if you look at those numbers for Jeff Criswell, I think his ERA was almost 7 in AAA, and yet he gets called up to the majors and he's pitching some big innings, pitching multiple innings on top of that too, and striking out guys, you know, at a pretty nasty clip. So I think by having so many of those young players to go back and forth on that I-25 commute, you know, that's going to lead to a better overall bullpen and should be more wins as well.
The arm barn is looking as bright as I can remember it in a long, long time, since before the super pen of the 2016 season. It was a while ago now, but gosh, good vibes coming out of the bullpen, good vibes coming out of the first full team workout. I think, shoot, this podcast has been a whole lot of fun. Shout out to the chat for being active too.
Yeah, appreciate everybody dropping by in the chat, leaving a message. If you listen to this on the podcast side of things, you can always leave a comment on YouTube. Make sure you leave a review on the podcast because we'll see those comments as well, and we can start a conversation there, and that helps the algorithm. We know you got to be true to the algo, and that'll help us in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and be sure just to drop a review, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere where you can find us. We really would appreciate it. We're trying to grow heading into a 2025 season that should have more answers than questions. So good time of the year to start getting excited about baseball.
Yeah. 2025 very much could be that bridge season to getting back to relevance, getting back to 500, maybe even sneaking into the postseason in 2026, but a lot has to go right in 2025. And it's off to a good start so far. So I don't think there's any actual bridges on Blake Street. If we're going to keep that analogy going, hopefully there's not a lot of potholes on this road to Blake Street.
There we go. I like that. We gotta keep something with roads and bridges, all that. No flights or anything like that.
Beep. Yeah.
Yo, yeah.
Yeah. This is a good time. I'm going to give you the green light to plug away, Noah.
Oh yeah. Well, shoot. On Twitter, Instagram, my username's just over here at Noah Spyrick. Love what Blake Street Banter has provided me an opportunity to talk about my favorite team. And this has been super fun.
Yeah. Make sure you're following him on social media, reading his work over at BlakeStreetBanter.com. I'm at Patrick D Lyons or at Patrick D Lyons MLB, writing for Just Baseball and Rockies Insider and the new Rockies Insider newsletter, which you could sign up for free. I got to go work on that right now and jot down some of my thoughts from everything that I saw today. Cause there certainly was a lot, and I know I'm not even going to remember half of it. I need to get some rest after the 13 and a half hour drive on Monday down here. Goodness. I made it. I got out of the cold. I'm into the baseball weather. So I think things are going to be all right.
You did it. That's a long drive. One day I'll be able to make that.
Yeah, I just don't feel like breaking it up and like staying over somewhere. So I'll just knock it out. You get into like the headspace and you're just driving. You know you can't really take any breaks other than to get gas. And you get there and that's it.
Pass out as soon as you get there.
And then you pass out. No, then you get a second wind of energy and you grab a bite to eat with your buddy. And yeah, this was great, Noah. I appreciate you having me on and being my co-host. I'm looking forward to a fun year doing this. It's going to be great.
I'm super excited. I think I've all the podcasts that we've been able to do over the years, and this one I'm really excited for.
Yeah, so for Sean, Christian, Rusty, Wild, to Grant, thank you for providing some wonderful momentum down that road to Blake Street. But you know what they like to say about momentum? Beep, beep.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time. Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today.
Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.